this Tuesday, March 22nd. I'm Lori Boyer with today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'll start us off on the show today with a check-in of regional agricultural news, and that's coming up right after this word from our sponsor.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In regional agricultural news, the Department of Water Resources has announced it must reduce the state water project allocation of 5% of requested supplies for 2022. DWR previously set the allocation at 15%, but a historically dry January and February with no significant storms forecast for March requires a reduction in the allocation to conserve available water supply. In addition to the 5% allocation, DWR will also provide any unmet critical health and safety needs of the 29 water agencies that contract to receive state water project supplies. They are experiencing climate change whiplash in real time with extreme swings between wet and dry conditions. That means adjusting quickly based on the data and the science, according to DWR Director Carla Nemeth. She says while they hope for more rain or snow, they have been preparing for a third consecutive year of drought since October. They are continuing with a series of actions to balance the needs of endangered species, water supply conservation, and water deliveries for millions of Californians. In a letter to the state water contractors earlier this month, DWR Director Nemeth stressed the need for proactive conservation measures now to prepare for ongoing extreme dry conditions. DWR will make its next assessment at the state water project allocation following the next snow survey on April 1st. A final allocation for the water year is typically announced in May or June. The lack of significant precipitation in January and February has resulted in falling reservoir levels and reduced snowpack. The statewide reservoir levels are about 70% of average. The statewide Sierra snowpack has fallen to 55% of average, and most of that snow is coming from heavy snowstorms in December. As the state prepares for a third dry year, DWR will preserve as much storage as possible in Lake Oroville, the state water project's largest reservoir. Water releases from Lake Oroville will be prioritized to maintain delta water quality, protect endangered species, and meet senior water needs. Also, DWR, along with its federal partners at the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, will submit a revised application for a temporary urgency change petition for operations from April 1st through June 30th. The petition will seek flexibility for the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project to release less water into the Delta through June 2022 to conserve limited stored water in Shasta, Oroville, and Folsom reservoirs. DWR and Reclamation had previously submitted an application for earlier in the year. However, December storms made that application unnecessary and it was withdrawn. This new application is necessary due to dramatically changing conditions and covers modified dates and operational requests. While these necessary actions will help extend the state's existing water supply, all Californians should do their part to conserve as much water as possible to make it last. Governor Newsom has called on all Californians to voluntarily reduce their water use by 15% with simple measures to protect water reserves. The October 2021 emergency proclamation expanded the drought emergency statewide and authorized the State Water Board to ban wasteful water uses, boosting conservation efforts. The State Water Board provides monthly updates on California's water conservation efforts on their website. Californians can learn more about how to save water inside and outside their home at www.saveourwater.com. The state is also taking actions to support communities facing water supply challenges due to the ongoing drought. DWR is providing direct community assistance for drought relief projects and to communities who need it most to address water supply challenges and help to build local resilience. In addition, Californians can now access current water conditions in real time at California Water Watch, a new website launched by DWR. The website will help Californians see their local hydrological conditions, forecast, and water conditions down to their address or their local watershed. The site presents data from a variety of sources and allows the public to obtain a quick snapshot of local and statewide water conditions. Texas-grown onions are hitting the market as spring starts just in time as the Northwest storage crops are running low on supplies. In a buyer alert, Marcon Cooperative said Northwest storage stocks remain on pace to be depleted sooner than later. Texas sooner than normal. Texas-grown yellow onions are readily available. Red onions are out as well. Fresh-run onions will have feathery skins and light color and exterior compared to Northwest storage onions. The size is small at the start of the season. Medium onions will dominate harvests. Mexican onions crossing into South Texas have increased. Prices have eased. Washington onions will be depleted in early April. Supplies ordinarily run through May. Idaho-Oregon-grown onions will ship into April. However, some suppliers will run out of supplies in late March. Stocks typically ship into May. California onions from the Imperial Valley are now available, and the New Mexico season will open in early June. According to USDA, prices for Northwest 50-pound bags of jumbos have been steady at about $20 for the past month, while Mexican crossings through Texas have been $25 to $30 a bag, but prices have fallen on those about $5 a bag in the past week. A severe drought has gripped western parts of the U.S. since the middle of 2020. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says drought will likely persist or worsen in the spring due to above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. NOAA Spring Outlook says dry conditions will likely heighten the risk of wildfires across the Southwest and Southern Plains and will stress farms across California. The National Drought Mitigation Center says over 60% of the continental U.S. is under a minor drought or worse, the widest drought coverage since 2013. NOAA's Climate Prediction Center says prolonged persistent drought will continue to impact much of the West, and drought will develop during April through June in the Southwest and the Central and Southern Plains. Water levels in many Western lakes are at record low levels, but drought conditions are expected to lessen or end in the upper Midwest and the coastal areas of the Southwest.
That was Lori Boyer with today's regional news. We'll be right back with a report on citrus after this.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Good morning, this is Taylor with My Ag Life. In 2020, the COVID-19 outbreak saw a rise in demand for healthy foods, including citrus for its immunity-boosting, vitamin C-rich properties. Continued growth was expected going into 2021 by many, such as Rabobank North American Manager for Food and Ag Research, Roland Fumasi, but wasn't exactly achieved.
Given the healthfulness attributes of citrus, we saw an uptick in demand when COVID took hold. 2021 still saw some decent tailwinds from that. And I think we're still seeing some benefits, but not, you know, we're not seeing that increased demand surge like we saw when COVID first broke out. The other thing to keep in mind is, as you know, when food service shut down, that starts to kind of change that mix for different types of citrus as well. So I think definitely consumers spending more time at home favored those kind of citrus categories that consumers favor when they're eating at home. Oranges, mandarins, etc. We even saw an uptick in grapefruit demand when everybody was spending more time at home because people were actually eating breakfast at home again, right? And that uptick in grapefruit demand, it hasn't been as sticky as I had hoped it'd been. So I would say, as far as citrus demand overall, as we look at 2022, definitely stable to increasing. It just depends on the specific product. For example, lemon demand has been one of the most positive stories now over the last really 7-8 years. That demand growth continues to be robust because of the healthfulness and the versatility of uses for something like lemons. Mandarin demand, absolutely. You know, you look at the last 10-20 years, continues to be strong. It's a more Mandarin demand in the U.S. market's more mature now, but continues to export demand for California mandarins continues to grow.
Wonderful Citrus President Zach Lafitte said that this year, 2022, will be looking a lot different for citrus.
We have a very light crop this year. And I think prices, obviously between inflation, supply chain, and what comes with having a lighter crop, you're seeing higher prices at retail. We're seeing consumption drop off. Retail dollars seem to be up, which is always a positive. But it really boils down to having a really good eating experience. There's an enormous amount of options at the store now. And once you disappoint, there's plenty of others waiting for to take up that shelf space.
Fumazi looked to the present day for things that could affect the citrus industry, noting the Russia-Ukraine conflict could cause problems for pre-existing issues like high input prices.
The escalation of this conflict now will add more fuel to that fire, okay, potentially. We were expecting ag, chem, and fertilizer prices to maybe start to ease off in the later part of the year this year. That could still happen. It depends on how long this conflict goes on, how it potentially changes, and there are some other potential positives for growers on this front, and that is that there's still a possibility that China, for example, comes back into the export market. They're you know, a large exporter of components that go into ag chem, some ag fertilizers. They stepped away from the export market in the last 6 or 8 months. And if they come back into that market, then that could help ease things a little bit. But it's a little too early to tell. So we're still seeing significantly higher input prices, and at least right now, for the coming months, we would expect that to continue.
Fumazi provided a few key takeaways of what the citrus industry and the ag industry in general might expect in the near future.
On the input cost side, whether that's fertilizer, whether that's ag chem, whether that's labor, we expect those cost increases to remain to be a challenge. We're not going to stay at the peaks forever on fertilizer and ag chem. Eventually there'll be a rebalancing and some easing. One of the other important takeaways, we do expect ocean freight rates to potentially start to ease in the second half of this year, because of how the industry structure has changed in that particular industry, we don't foresee going prices for ocean freight to go back down to 2019 levels for the foreseeable future. So that was another important takeaway. And then I would say the last takeaway is, you know, what I refer to the trifecta of success for food choices. And these aren't the only factors that influence consumer purchase decisions, but they're ones that are critical. And that is the taste, eating experience, right? Secondly, convenience and versatility. And then the last would be healthfulness. And that was another major takeaway for the citrus industry, because I think the citrus industry and the products that come out of that industry really tick those boxes quite well. Some products, more of one thing than another, all certainly tick that healthfulness box in a big way. But you think about the versatility of lemons. You think about the convenience of easy peels, for example. The eating experience of all good citrus that's produced in the right way, like we do it in California, that's positive for the citrus industry.
That was our first segment of the day. Here's Lori Boyer with today's national news.
A severe drought has gripped western parts of the U.S. since the middle of 2020. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says drought will likely persist or worsen in the spring due to above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. NOAA Spring Outlook says dry conditions will likely heighten the risk of wildfires across the Southwest and Southern Plains and will stress farms across California. The National Drought Mitigation Center says over 60% of the continental U.S. is under a minor drought or worse, the widest drought coverage since 2020. 2013. NOAA's Climate Prediction Center says prolonged persistent drought will continue to impact much of the West, and drought will develop during April through June in the Southwest and the Central and Southern Plains. Water levels in many Western lakes are at record low levels, but drought conditions are expected to lessen or end in the upper Midwest and the coastal areas of the Southwest. Russia's war in Ukraine has prompted more questions and answers for the U.S. and other major growers. Dave Samuelson, the American Farm Bureau Federation's Senior Director of Congressional Relations, says many questions will have to get answered in the weeks ahead amid huge grain and oilseed shortfalls from Ukraine and Russia.
How will the world respond with planting at a time when costs are high to put crops in the ground? And how will that work out? Of course, as the year goes on, we have no idea what our weather is going to be and our yields. So definitely a lot of questions in the air.
Duration will be key.
The longer this goes on, the greater the impacts, the conflict in Ukraine, the greater the impacts will be.
As supply channels move away from the Black Sea region.
So much of what many countries around the world, especially in the Middle East, North Africa, China. China's buying a lot of soybeans for now, and I think contracting for next year from the U.S.
While fertilizer shortfalls from major providers, Russia and Belarus fuel higher input costs.
So much of what many countries around the world, especially in the Middle East, North Africa, China. China's buying a lot of soybeans for now, and I think contracting for next year from the U.S.
While fertilizer shortfalls from major providers, Russia and Belarus fuel higher input costs.
Higher fuel and fertilizer prices affects everybody, whether you grow wheat and corn and soybeans or not. That affects everybody in agriculture and everybody in the economy.
Can countries increase energy supplies? Samuelson says yes, but it takes time to get rigs up and running. And time, of course, is a commodity producers don't have. Planting and harvesting cannot wait, nor can a hungry and growing world population. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is taking specific actions to improve America's nutrition security. The USDA's nutrition security efforts build on the work the agency and its partners are doing to improve food security by increasing the department's focus on diet-related chronic diseases. Studies show that diet-related diseases are a leading cause of death in the country. COVID-19 brought food insecurity to the forefront of the national conversation and shined a new light on the devastating toll of chronic disease, according to USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. As many as two-thirds of COVID hospitalizations in the country are related to diet-related diseases. The strategies for improving nutrition security include providing nutrition support through all life stages, connecting all Americans with healthy and affordable food sources, developing and enacting nutrition science through partnerships, and prioritizing equity every step of the way. Poor diet increases the risks of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and more. Modernizing the WIC program is among the agency's first objectives. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers has surveyed its members quarterly for nearly 2 years to understand how quickly they expect to recover their businesses to pre-COVID-19 levels. The responses have been positive, but, and there's always a but, member data from the last quarter has begun to move again in the other direction, largely due to the headwinds they're facing with inflation, workforce issues, and supply chain disruptions, according to AEM Director of Market Intelligence, Benjamin Duck. Recovering from a sharp 3-month economic downturn in the early days of COVID, equipment sales have since been good to quite strong. The last recession they experienced ended the longest period of economic expansion in the United States, and that recession lasted from February of 2020 to April of 2020, according to Duck. 2 months in traditional economic terms can't even be accurately described as a recession. However, this economic disruption has impacted them all greatly, and people are still dealing with the after effects today: labor shortages, supply chain problems, and higher interest rates. Yet the economic picture is less than clear. For example, small tractor sales, those under 100 horsepower, rose sharply month over month from mid-2020 to almost the end of 2021. Even today, sales of those units remain positive over the year-ago sales, if not quite as strong as they had been. More recently, sales of two-wheel drive tractors of more than 100 horsepower have turned sharply upward. Large tractors and combines have posted some up and down months, but generally, sales have been steady. Reflecting sales, AEM member growth expectations remain strong, strong. 81% expect year-over-year growth in the months ahead. 91% expect growth to continue. Important to that outlook is farm income. It has continued to grow regardless of government support declines and high production cost increases, including anhydrous, potash, and diesel. While the global economy remains on track to expand in 2022, the agriculture and construction equipment industries are challenged by various degrees of economic static. For example, grain markets and the war in Ukraine, and however that conflict might spin off in unexpected directions. As far as prices are concerned, prices have probably seen their highs from concerns about Russia's assault on Ukraine, unless something there goes off the rails more than anyone would expect. Inflation is another important concern inside the farm and construction equipment industries. There has been an 11.7% year-over-year increase in the price of farm machinery, according to Doug. On a construction side, inflation is coming in at 9.7%. Talent acquisition is another significant issue. He says, according to the results of AEM's most recent quarterly member survey, hiring on a manufacturing floor remains a major issue. 84% of all respondents have experienced workforce issues. Manufacturers have developed a range of potential strategies and tactics for addressing hiring challenges, internships, educational partnerships, higher wages, bonuses, marketing, and recruitment efforts, flexible hours, and outsourcing. But the workforce will remain a prevalent issue for equipment manufacturers for the foreseeable future, he said. And then the supply chain feeding ag and construction equipment manufacturers remains an issue. Sales are strong, but deliveries of new equipment are sometimes long delayed, especially pieces of machinery where those inventories were depleted in 2021. Evidence of parts and materials shortages are clearly seen in the used equipment market, where low tractor hours, combines, grain carts, among other high demand pieces of equipment are garnering prices not too short of new. According to AEM's most recent quarterly survey of its members, more than 95% of ag and construction equipment manufacturers that responded said they are experiencing supply chain issues, according to Duck. However, it appears either demand is beginning to normalize or supply chain signaling is improving, because 44% of respondents noted that the issues are beginning to turn around.
Up next, Ashton Carr reports on new Department of Water Resources funding and support for drought-stricken communities.
Recently, the Department of Water Resources has awarded $49 million to help small communities that have been impacted by drought conditions. These drought conditions are anticipated to continue, so we talked to Kevin Falkenberry, who is the region manager for DWR South Central Region Office, about this award.
We are in the process of identifying applicants or that would receive part of a $200 million grant program that was provided by the legislature. Of that $200 million, and up to this point, we've had six phases of grant awards. Those awards have totaled $142 million plus, I think, to the communities that small communities in the valley that need our help or that are being impacted by drought and need some sort of monetary resource to help provide drinking water to their communities. So phase six is the most recent, and probably it is the largest phase of our program so far. So we had a total of 18 projects that we identified in this phase, and it was a total of like $49.5 million. It was just recently provided. These projects, the projects that we funded in this phase covered anything from water hauling, which means that they're moving water from point A to point B where there is not really something's happened so that their water source or the transfer system or the conveyance system to the individuals has broken down. So they are hauling water to these individuals, or they're providing bottled water to these individuals. We funded new wells, rehabbing wells. We've consolidated some of the community members where they had individual wells into one system, so that the community members on individual wells are now being provided water by a larger treatment system or a larger water system to provide them drinking water. We also funded inner ties, new pumps, new water tanks, and looked at backup water sources for them, or gave them the funds or the means by which they can put in a backup water system.
The process to choosing which project gets the funding is a lengthy one. Luckily, we had Kevin to walk us through the process.
First of all, we have guidelines, right? So we're trying to be, our big deal is that I pointed out, we are focusing on small communities in the Valley. That's communities that have less than 3,000 connections or service or provide less than 3,000 acre feet of water to those. So basically the individuals would submit an application to us. The process is, for lack of a better term, generally based on a first come, first serve basis. So once you submit your application, you wait in line till we get back to you, and then we review your application with you. We either ask you questions, help you refine it. And then if and when it moves forward, the project goes for approval. Once that approval's made, then you're given a commitment letter, which means from the date of the commitment letter, you can begin to get eligible. You can begin to pay for eligible costs, and that knowing that when we put the funding agreement together for you, that there's a good chance you're going to be reimbursed for those costs. Then once you get your commitment letter, then we work with you to develop a grant agreement. And then once the grant agreement is in place, then we work with you to we'll work with you to get that in place, get that signed, and then we'll start to reimburse you for eligible costs for that related to that project. So how do we get and select them? Well, our primary basis of selection is, well, when were you, you know, when did your application come in? And then we start to look at things too. We get applicants often that are identified by the local State Water Resources Control Board, or identified in the application as being urgent or emergencies. In other words, water's zero. They don't have water. They need some kind of an emergency, supply to the households, like water, bottled water, those kind of things. Or there could be, some kind of emergency, like the well's growing dry. It's not dry yet, but we need to go out and drill something, or we need to fix this well because it's failing. It needs a new pump, or, you know, the treatment system is not working quite right, and we need to fix that right away. And these are all these impacts that we're addressing are related to drought. Remember that, and related to drinking water, providing them with drinking water. So if there's in the source of a first come, first serve, we're also of the funding agencies that we have in California for the drought, we're the one that can react the fastest. So we have a process by which we work closely with the communities and try to provide them their funding and their commitment letter and their funding as fast as we can so that we can get them on the ground. You know, you don't want the communities to be without water or drinking water for very long. And some of these communities don't have the resources to supply water to the community members. So we reach in and help them out and provide them with the funding they need and the resources or whatever resources they need to provide that water. So we end up with a list of projects based on the order they came in and are there really big emergencies, realizing that we're in an emergency drought right now and it's getting worse. So when somebody rises to the top of an emergency, it's a serious issue. And we need to help them right away, right? And so we're a little bit more flexible than a lot of the other funding programs in the state, just so that we can react quickly for these communities and provide them the support they need to keep going.
If you would like to stay up to date on how California is taking action against the drought, check out drought.ca.gov.
The California Walnut Conference is back. Mark your calendars for April 7th and 8th at the Yuba Center Fairgrounds. This growing event has become the gem of Northern California Ag and brings walnut industry professionals together from across the Golden State. Be part of the experience and learn about new technologies, research, and meet with other ag insiders at the premier walnut conference in California. Register today at wcngg.com/events. The California Walnut Conference is powered by your top news resources in California, West Coast Nut, Progressive Crop Consultants, and My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.